that. You've got all these resources and stuff.
Mm-hmm. You're going to be in there every year.
Every major league season is precious.
That's how you talk when you have windows. And when you have,
but then he's also given answers that make it seem like
I want to prop that window open. I ripped Huntington for this though when he was on the job. I should be ripping Charrington for it.
I think those guys have a lot in common, don't they? Seem very, very like eerily similar to you.
Yes, they both went. They're both what, from New Hampshire? Went to like similar or the same prep schools. Yes, they do. They have. I've always thought that they replaced Neil Huntington with the Spider-Man meme.
So does that bode well for your expectations for what happens at the trade deadline and moving forward with him in charge?
It doesn't have me super jazzed. I mean, Huntington ended up doing, I think, in balance, a good job here.
He had
ridiculously good seasons by their standards in a row. I think there were things he did wrong. But again, by this time on the job for Neil Huntington, we had started to see actual results. He got hired in late 2007. Charrington got hired in what, late 2019?
Mm-hmm. And then 2020, I don't really count because it was a 30-game season.
But we had seen Huntington start to field a competitive team. This would be, what, his 2012 equivalent? That team should have broken the curse of, or the losing season streak.
Well, if you go by that then, Chris, they are about the same because that team won, what, 78, 79
79
games?
And
that's where this team is ticketed right now.
But that
now.
Team looked like a better team in a lot of ways. Like they had some hitters, they had some guys.
One of the worst Septembers we've ever seen.
Correct. This team, what's frustrating about this team continues to be for me that I just don't know. Charrington can say everything he just said. I don't know if he really does understand how precious this season is with what he has in his starting rotation. And when he talks about keeping seasons open in the future and keep the window open, that does bring me back to, are there innings limits that'll come into play? Because next year you'd think most of those limits, if not all of them, would be out the window.
Well, but that would contradict that every major league season is precious if you're in the mix and you cash out on a season with your two best pitchers when the whole reason why your team is in the playoff mix is because of those pitchers. If they were a great hitting team
mm-hmm.
and they had young pitchers that they were careful with and they felt like, well, you know, our teams can win games 9-7. We don't need these guys. And they wanted to be extra cautious and shut them down, I still would not say right move, but I would get it more. I would understand it better. The whole reason why fans from time, like depending on how they're doing, they've just won two in a row, depending on the last time we saw Paul Skenes pitch or Jared Jones or Mitch Keller pitch, depending on what day of the week it is, and if those things line up, people can get very excited about this current team, not next year's team or 2 years from now.
Correct.
Right now. So to me, if you're saying every major league season is precious, like the one we're in right now where we are in the mix, you can't then in September say, well, check that. I'm looking at the numbers here and you know,
these innings counts. But 40, if you're trying
47% of pitchers that increase their innings by more than 30 innings end up needing Tommy John. So,
but if you're the Verducci rule? But if you're trying to be competitive down the,
what is Flex, by the way? A baseball writer has a baseball rule named after him. Imagine if there was the Starkey rule or the Zeiss rule in a sport, the Cook rule.
What would the Starkey rule even be? I'm trying to think of like something that's funny about Joe that's applicable here.
If a player gets stung by a bee, he's traumatized for life and doesn't want to play anymore. You need to trade him away.
Retire immediately. If a player is given a speeding ticket on the Zeiss rule, then he immediately gets a new contract. I don't know. There is enough said in that quote about next year and years beyond that just has me thinking that he's trying to satisfy both ends of it here. He's trying to serve two masters. And I should be more consistent and be a little more critical of this because Neil Huntington would routinely talk that way. And it ultimately gave them three really good seasons in a row, but never got them to where they wanted to be.
The thing about that answer, the way that you're describing it, and he did say that, quote, it's not a matter of whether we're willing to give up something to get something. We are. We should be willing to do that. We're ready to do that. We have to find the right matches. We have to find that trade that doesn't make us feel like we're completely mortgaging the future and at the same time makes this team better. Or if we're renting somebody and it's only for this year, it's going to be like in 2013 with Justin Morneau, where does anybody even remember who went back to the Twins in that deal?
I do not.
Me neither. I have no idea. Donnie, maybe look that up. Who did we? Who did the
Pirates? Did they even send a player or was it cash?
Okay, there it makes my point even better. Like, we gave up next to nothing for a guy that we plugged right in and played every day. So they'll do that kind of rental. They won't do the rental where they give up prospects and then the guy is gone as soon as the season is over. But what I'm getting at is, on June 27th, what, you found it?
Okay. Donnie, I hope you didn't look this up. Morneau traded by the Twins to the Pirates for a PTBNL and Alex Presley. Been to Canada, Alex?
Ah, yes.
If either of you can name the PTBNL, the player to be named later in the Morneau trade, I will. Here we go.
I've got a memory hole on it, man. I'm not going to be able to do it. So
I will give either of you $5 if you can do it.
I don't have this one. I wish I did, but I don't.
This guy's a legend, Donnie. This man was
Mike Zagurski?
No. He appeared in a whopping 2 games in the major leagues ever. Duke Welker. Who could forget Duke Welker?
And I'm sure at the time we had people calling in who love prospects who said they're going to regret trading.
When they made the Bird trade, I distinctly remember a guy on Twitter who I think I followed because
Was he one of these prospect nuts?
That wasn't his main vibe on Twitter, but it turned out that was part of his thing, because when they made the Bird trade, people were, I think, reasonably excited about that. He sent a bunch of tweets to various baseball, like Pirate-centric accounts going, this is a horrible trade. How could they give up Dilson Herrera? Like, this is going to set them back 5 years. I'll look up Dilson Herrera for you right now, Pony. Dilson Herrera, 6 years in the major leagues technically, 272 career major league plate appearances, and a 676 OPS. He has not played a baseball game in the majors since 2020.
Yeah, they didn't regret that trade.
No, they did not.
The point I'm trying to make is that you can say that you're looking for this perfect match on June 27th when there's another month plus before the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
There's not the urgency yet because you haven't fallen out of the race. You're still in the thick of it. You're treading water. No one has made a deal within that mix of teams that makes you nervous, like, oh, crap, they got the player I wanted or I was targeting.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for the GM to pretty much say, at this point, right match, I'm only going to make a trade unless it fits exactly the specifications that I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're planning on moving somewhere. You want to be in that new house or whatever a year from now. Like, you're being more picky about what you're shopping for, what you're looking for when you're in the first couple of weeks or months of that process. I think that's where they're at. It'll be interesting if whether he's saying it is one thing, but if internally that's how they really feel when we get closer to the deadline. The only thing that makes me wonder about that is what the owner said. The owner made it sound like his preference would be for something to get done very, very soon. Make something happen now. We don't have to wait. We don't have to circle.
How much do you think that's tied to the owner understanding that they've had a couple bad losses, but if they continue to not hit great, but they just go on a winning streak, they hit a little bit more, that is quelled within him? Because I think that's plausible. Like, the owner, if they win 5 or 6 games in a row and suddenly they're over
500. So what if Nutting had given that interview? What if they had made the sponsorship deal not last Friday, but this Friday, and they've won 2 games in Cincinnati, and they've scored runs the last 2 games?
I wonder if he's a... I don't know this. I'm not saying this to rip him either. I don't know if he's a prisoner of the moment a little bit about it. I give him credit that when it happened last Friday, he was clearly annoyed enough by what he had seen on the field that he actually said something about it.
They want a Little Red Riding Hood deal, or not Little Red Riding Hood. Who's the other? Goldilocks. They want a Goldilocks
deal. They want the right
deal.
Bowl of porridge.
They want the third bowl of porridge right now, the one that's just right.
So you said you wonder, because they're so early in this process, if they're looking only for the perfect deal, and you compare it to house buying. That's fine. What if, though, Rowdy Tellez continues to hit, and a couple of guys in that lineup, I'm not saying they make all-star hitting turns, right? But they uptick. They come up to the mean a little bit. That combined, if it all happened, would start to look pretty damn good if Reynolds is hitting. What if he said just as picky a month from now as he would otherwise be, because they're hitting a little more and they're in the thick of the race? It's not gonna squelch fans' desire to see them still out of bat, but it might internally douse that fire for them a little bit. If they're four games over 500 and they're scoring a little bit more in the way of runs with the guys they have, they won't feel as much urgency, I don't think.
I don't think that. But I think even in that case, fans, if Sawinski started hitting home runs like crazy and Taylor started to hit like he did last year and Hayes started to look like the guy he did in the second half of last year, if two out of those three things happen, I think fans would be not like completely satiated and satisfied, but I think they would be okay if the Pirates did not swing for the fences with a big hitter. I think they would probably just say, give me a couple bullpen arms so I don't have to watch Danny Santana and Justin Brule anymore. And that's
give me that guy Contreras from the Angels. He looks like a promising arm. How about you talk to the Dodgers?
I think
about
he
that
started the other day. I think he actually made a start for them.
His batting average on balls in play is unsustainably low, Pony, so they actually made the right move to get
Who
rid
said
of him.
That?
The same people telling me in no uncertain terms that they would never do the Vlad Guerrero trade hypothetical I put out there are also telling me that Roansy Contreras actually isn't that good.
And Contreras yesterday, three innings, four hits, one run, two walks, two strikeouts, ERA and LA for the year now, 3.24.
But what's his FIP?
FIP?
What's his ex-FIP?
His FIP is 4.36.
Hmm. What was his best FIP in the Pirates organization?
Best FIP with the Pirates?
Can't use that first year where he
4.38
had
4.38 FIP. Hmm.
I guess Roansy just is who we thought he was.
One of the things that's hardest to do is when you're on the air, while you're talking, try to keep up with a breaking story that's a complicated one. And then try to take what you're digesting from it and repeat it into the microphone in ways that people understand it. I have a very difficult time doing so with this NFL Sunday Ticket story. It's a $4.096 billion verdict.
Mm-hmm. 96 of which go, the $96 million goes to the commercial entities.
Goes to bars and restaurants.
Yep.
And then $4 billion becomes the recovery for people like you and me, regular Joes.
But as Mike Florio writes, that result is automatically trebled.
It turns into over $12 billion. So really they lost...
12.2 something billion?
Yep.
12.3 billion? If that part of it, the .096 gets trebled.
Ray Fittipaldi from the Post-Gazette with us now, Steelers insider. Ray, have you followed this story at all?
A little bit. Forget about Ayuk, guys. Salary cap's going down, so no big ticket receiver.
Do you really think that's going to happen now because of this?
I didn't Roger Goodell, I don't know if he said that in court or if he was interviewed and said that, but I thought I read that somewhere in the last couple of days that if they get, you know, if they get hit pretty good with this lawsuit, the salary cap's going to go down. Now, I don't know if that's going to turn out to be true. There's still so many billions of dollars and TV revenue coming in every year, then it's probably not going to go down, but it might plateau a little bit.
But if it's $12 billion, the league annually is making $19 billion right now. So that's more than half of what they make, Ray. Right. I should have thought about that immediately. Like, if that comes out of the revenue that gets generated from the league, I guess it could mean that teams have less money to work with, which, oh my God, all these contracts have been based on the salary kept going up and never stopping.
I know. How about that Justin Jefferson contract? How's that looking now?
The Steelers sitting pretty yet again, Ray. They still don't have to pay a quarterback. They are just well positioned for the DirecTV Sunday Ticket fallout.
I mean, you guys remember what happened with COVID. I mean, the cap went down for a year or so, maybe 2 years, and then it was right back up after that new TV deal was signed. It was right back up. Now it's higher than ever. So, I mean, worst case scenario, you know, you go through a little blip like that again, but the NFL's a machine, man. It's not going to, this isn't going to cripple them long term or anything like that.
We had Mike Florio on yesterday, Ray, and we were talking about what Kenny Pickett's personal quarterbacks coach said regarding his exit here. And to paraphrase, the guy went to, I think, the Newark Star-Ledger and said that Kenny was basically, it was character assassination by the organization to make him look bad on the way out. And Florio's response was, did Kenny need help to look bad with the way he played? How much truth is there in the comment by the personal QB coach that it was character assassination by the organization on the way out the door?
Yeah, listen, guys. I mean, it definitely does depend on who you're talking to within that organization who will have Kenny's back. And, you know, they'll tell you, yeah, there were other people in that building who were talking bad about him. I don't know if I want to go as far as character assassination, but the Steelers definitely got their word out there pretty quickly on what they wanted the narrative to be. So, yeah, I mean, there are still some people in that building, you know, that believe Kenny was better than what he was in terms of how he, you know, handled himself on that exit. And then you talk to other people and, you know, they'll swear up and down that Kenny handled the whole thing poorly too. So honestly, guys, it just depends on, you know, which source you want to talk to inside that building.
Was that the only thing, though, the way that it all went down at the very end of his time with the Steelers? Was that the only thing on the radar, really, Ray? Like, it does seem like it went from, no, we believe in this guy, we believe in his intangible qualities to an extreme degree, to a very sort of swift 180 at the very tail end of his time.
Yeah, I mean, there was stuff that happened late in the season. I don't, you know, the exact timeline. When did Kenny get asked about when he watched? What did he learn when he watched Mason? Was that week 16 or week 17? I forget. But, you know, Kenny didn't handle himself well there. Came off looking bad. Came off like he was a little bit jealous of Mason. I thought, you know, you're in the middle of a playoff push and, you know, you're kind of out there saying stuff, you know, for yourself. So that maybe irked people a little bit. But, yeah, I think everything that happened within, what, the last – 3 or 4 weeks in the season, and the majority of this stuff happened, you know, once Kenny Pickett found out that he was going to be in a competition with Russell Wilson.
Kabali wrote that he doesn't think the Steelers would give Justin Fields a Jordan Love extension this summer, that the 1 year, $13.5 million, basically half of what he would have gotten on the fifth year option to lock him in for next year to make sure you had a quarterback on the roster, is just a bridge too far for the Steelers. A, do you agree with that, Ray? And if you do, what kind of contract extension do you think the Steelers would try to get done with Fields before the season started?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they do, guys. I mean, you would want to find out if he could play, and there's no guarantees. If Russell Wilson plays well, and if Russell Wilson stays healthy, then you might not know, and you might be locked into $13 million for 2025, and you know, Russell Wilson's going to want his money too. So there's no easy answer to this question. I think in the end, they're going to see what goes down in 2024, and then they'll work feverishly from the end of the season until the middle of March to try to figure out who they're going to pay and how much they're going to pay.
So you don't think anybody has a contract for 2025 when the season starts, Ray?
I don't. I mean, I think they're going to want to get done something done with Pat Freiermuth. They're going to want to lock him up. But in terms of quarterbacks, I just think they want to see how it plays out. I think that's been what the plan was since March, and it's changed.
Ray, do you think that Tomlin's relationship with Fields, the fact that he obviously was such a big fan of him, that Fields has to know that, plays in at all to their calculus here of kind of come what may with the quarterback position, because they know, all things being equal, the player might want to stay here even if he doesn't get a contract offer, because he knows the coach is in his corner big time?
Yeah, and Omar said on your station last week that it wasn't just Mike, you know, that I think he said we loved him, yeah, you know, coming out of college too. So I think it's an organizational thing. You know, I've said this in the past, guys. I just think where the Steelers are right now in 2024, with the defense holding teams to 20 points or under, ideally, you need a quarterback like Russell Wilson who's going to protect the football and make a few more plays than Kenny Pickett. I don't think you need a guy like Justin Fields right now who is, you know, prone to turnovers and, you know, a guy who hasn't really over the long haul showed what, you know, what he can do in terms of what Russell Wilson can do. So I just think for this time period right now, 2024, the Steelers need the skill set of Russell Wilson more than Justin Fields, but down the road, who knows? I mean, some of these contracts are going to come off the books and the team's going to change. But I think for right now, Wilson is the ideal quarterback for this football team if he plays well.
What level of tolerance do they really have if Wilson does play well? Like, just has, I'm not going to put numbers on it, but we all would agree he has just an objectively good season. Let's say they even win a playoff game. What kind of tolerance would they have for paying pretty close to top of the market money for a guy who's in his late 30s at that point?
I mean, I'm just going to throw a number out here. $35, $37 million over 2 years. So what, $75 to $80 million, I think, is over 2 years.
Man.
Take him up to 37, 38. I don't think you go above 40 for a guy who's that old. That's just, I mean, what was Tom Brady making his final couple of years? I know he was on team-friendly deals, but he wasn't breaking the cap when he was 40, 41 years old. So, you know, Russ can have a good year, but I don't know that he can expect, you know, those huge contracts that are being paid out to those younger guys.
Do you read anything into him working out with DK Metcalf right now that the Brandon Ayuk thing has been tabled?
I mean, I saw that. They're former teammates, I'm sure. You know, they hooked up. Where was that? California, L.A. somewhere, I think. Yeah. So, I just think two friends getting together, putting their work in before training camp. I wouldn't read too much into that. But, you know, Ayuk yesterday, everyone says it was a good meeting. I mean, we'll see what happens over the next month. But, maybe there is going to be another alternative down the road in terms of a receiver.
Ray, Russell Wilson was also boxing and working out with Manny Pacquiao's old trainer, Freddie Roach. What Steeler that you've covered in your time on the beat would have made the best boxer?
Well, you have the Tunch punch, right? Tunch Ilkin perfected that offensive line punch. He taught that. He taught every year. Wolfley has like a, I don't know if Wolfley still
Wolfley
has,
fought
like
Butterbean.
Yeah, I mean, he has like a boxing club or something in Bridgeville.
And what's going on with Wolfley's Twitter? Are we to really believe in his 60s? All of a sudden, he's tweeting nonstop and he's verified, and these are all his original thoughts. I think that's very strange, Ray. It seems like he went the AB route and gave his Twitter account to someone to run it for him.
I'm going to be honest, guys. I haven't noticed, but there's been a lot of other stuff on my timeline, but I haven't seen Wolfley.
All right. Thank you, Ray.
Well, that's we'll okay, Chalooch.
See ya. Ray Fittipaldo,
all right, Chalooch.
Everyone.
See ya.
I think I'm the only person that actually finds this to be.
You are, actually.
Very interesting.
You are. You definitely are.
TRT, Total Request Thursday time. We give you four topics to choose from. You pick what one you want to hear us debate and discuss. Penn's trading Tristan Jarry. That seems to be on the table. 19.5 said, yeah, go with that. Bob Carrington, drafted by the Blazers last night, then traded to the Wizards. Highest pit pick since Steven Adams. And Bronny James almost came to Duquesne, now in the NBA draft. Now, only 8% of you wanted us to talk about that, proving once again that Pittsburgh is not a basketball town. Hawk Tua. 35.3% said yes. Tell us more about this Southern Belle.
Oh, the belle of the ball.
But she was
narrowly held off.
Yes, she was.
Hawk Tua.
She was beaten off by the Pirates pursuing Vlad.
What now? Beg pardon?
Pirates pursuing Vlad, 37.1%.
Yeah, how did that?
She was beaten by Pirates pursuing Vlad. Bad Vlad Jr. Vlad the Impaler.
Vlad of Wallachia. That was where he was from in Romania.
37.1. You guys know this goon, Cody Duncan, on Twitter?
Yes,
you guys know
we know
this guy?
Cody
I think he
Duncan
called
is.
In and tried to debate us once.
Yes, we had a whole saga. We had a Cody Duncan saga on this show.
So
we gave him the floor, and he made very few good points.
He writes, he goes by Pirates blogger, Rum Bunter.
Wait, that's where he's doing
that's
now?
That's what it says, Rum Bunter.
Ugh.
Which is fine. Like, I give props to all the enterprising.
Well, I know the Rum Bunter history
team
and the
websites
person who,
out there. Good
the person
them.
Who founded Rum Bunter is not the person running it today.
I like a lot of those people. They will occasionally ask me to come on their podcasts or
do you do it?
And I do it. Yeah, if I have time, if it fits my schedule, I absolutely do it.
Okay.
And so he wrote an hour ago on Twitter. Robert Murray, who is a baseball insider who we've had on our show, just shut down any Vlad Jr. rumors to the Pirates that Pony mentioned. Period. And then the next sentence, he just writes, thankfully. Now,
so Robert Murray's an insider.
How does Robert Murray saying it's not going to happen shut it down?
Well, let's peel back some of the layers of the onion on this.
I can't wait to do this.
The first thing I'd like to address is the thankfully part of this. So all I said was that the Pirates, according to people I've talked to, really like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And among these, they know the big names that are being bandied about among fans and media. Among the big name players, that's the one they like the most.
Mm-hmm.
So Luis Robert Jr., Jazz Chisholm.
Those are pretty much the names.
Pete Alonso.
Those are the four.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Those are the four.
They like Guerrero Jr. the most. And then the second thing that I said was just in talking to people that either work for the Blue Jays or are tangentially related to them, what I got back was that they wanted, and they have not made this decision yet, not even close, if they do flip to sell mode, they want a massive package back. Juan Soto's name came up. And you went through the Juan Soto trade.
It was a big return.
Six players went to the Nationals in that deal.
It was a big return.
It was a monster.
And the guy who might end up being the best player of all is still in AAA.
It was a King Kong-sized trade.
Mm-hmm.
So when this Cody Duncan character says that Robert Murray shot this down, thankfully, is he thankful that the Pirates do not like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. the most among the
big
name players out there?
Or is he thankful that you personally had a story get shot down by his source?
But like,
or his guess.
But what is Robert Murray even shooting down? That the Pirates and Blue Jays are close to a deal?
Or that there's interest?
You
just said that that was the guy they were most interested in. So is that how Cody framed it to Robert Murray?
And why would you say why would your reaction, if you found out that the Pirates weren't interested in Vlad Guerrero Jr., would your reaction be thank God they don't like this player? They don't like a guy who's 25 years old and has hit a ton of home runs and is the spawn and scion of one of the great Major League Baseball players of the last 30 years? And can play first base, third base, and DH.
I mean, there's clearly,
thank God they're not interested.
There are clearly people who would agree with him because I got a ton of reactions. If the thankfully is, I'm glad they're not interested in this guy, he's not any good. There are a lot of people who I have seen write to me straight away and say, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is not a good baseball player.
You also had people, when we talked about Jazz Chisholm yesterday, say the same exact thing. I don't know if the Venn diagram has
people in the middle. One of the people who took time to text me personally and say Chisholm's not good said nothing about Vlad Jr. Let me tell you this, though. I think we have people who listen to this show who like to go to the mat for us. If for argument's sake, Cody Duncan's thankfully was more about you getting something shot down, which by extension is me because I said it too.
I don't even know what, like, this Robert, I've not seen a tweet or a message from this guy.
Correct.
It's funny because I was texting Robert Murray actually 2 days ago.
Congratulations on your success.
For some intel, and I was working on trying to get him on the show actually to talk about some of these trade rumors. So if I'm putting out what he believes is complete nonsense, he could have easily just texted me and said, hey man, you're wrong. Actually, Ben Cherington, who worked for the
you
Blue Jays for a
Cody's
couple
tweet.
Years.
You should send him Cody's
tweet.
You're right,
I should.
The first response to Cody's tweet, though, I have to give props because we have loyal fans of this show who defend us to the hilt. Because I think that's really what the guy's doing, is defending you, because Cody's clearly taking a little shot. This guy, Bergie, House of Berg, writes, did he also report on Aaron Judge's, quote, downfall? And then it was this tweet from Cody on December 7th, 2023. Yankee fans are welcome to bookmark this tweet, but here is my bold prediction for the 2024 MLB season. Aaron Judge is going to have a Chris Davis-like downfall.
Yeah,
injury-prone, strikes out way too much. The Linsanity run is over. Aaron Judge has 30 home runs, is hitting .309, and has an 1145 OPS. I just wanted to throw that out there.
The Linsanity part of that, too, never made any sort of sense.
Because Jeremy Lin was a flash in the pan.
Linsanity lasted like 2 weeks.
Yes. Aaron Judge has been one of the best power hitters in baseball since basically the day he set
the American League home run record.
Yes. Aaron Judge had 52 home runs in his first full season. So, yes, he was clearly Jeremy Lin. Anyway, this will probably compel Cody to call us back one day and demand he be given 5 straight minutes to talk.
I put a trade, like, would you make this trade, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and then I threw 4 Pirates players' names in there, but I didn't say that it was something that was a real trade offer that got made by the Pirates to the Blue Jays or anything like that, or vice versa. I just went through some of the parameters of the Soto thing that you talked about. And thought, all right, like what could be some kind of Pirates equivalent?
We've got more
to
updates
that kind
on this.
Of deal. Yes,
we got more updates. So Mark tweeted in. He said they directly address Pony by name at the 30:23 mark of a YouTube video, and it's Robert Murray tweeting it out.
Yeah.
So it's his baseball. Let me see here. It's just the video of his podcast or whatever. The Baseball Insiders. It's called Adam Weinrib.
Yep.
And Robert Murray. And at 30 minutes and 23 seconds of this, they announce you, they reference you by name. Would you like to just play it?
Are we able to do that? Or does Donnie have to go and find it and then
I mean, it's record? Tweeted to all, he quote tweeted it with all three of us
Donnie,
tagged.
Play the time in it that Chris is talking
30 minutes
about.
And 23 seconds.
Record
thanks
it
to our
and
friend
then
Mark.
Let's play it on
yeah.
the air here in a second.
Yeah.
Now we're getting somewhere.
Boy, we could have ended up talking about Hawk Qua. This is you want to talk about peeling back onion layers. This really is what we're doing.
Well, what, do we know what tweet they're talking about? Are they talking about the one where I just throw the...
I think they're just talking about generally like what you said you heard about Vlad, that they are more interested
so
in him
that,
than any other
have
big
have you
name.
Listened to it yet, or is this going to be completely...
It'll be completely new. Do you want me to listen to it first?
Do we take him at his word that this is the time? I guess
yeah.
we should.
Yeah. This guy's a reliable listener. Okay. He tweets us a
let's
lot.
Hear it.
Ownership. And I also, I want to address these Pirates questions because... I've seen Canyon mention this about four times about the Andrew
flooded with him. Yeah,
about the Andrew Filippone tweet. No. That's my official response to that is no. And do I ultimately think the Pirates front office backs up what they're saying? I will never guarantee anything, but I think they're very intent and serious about trying to upgrade this roster. And if they can end up going and adding another bat, I think they'd absolutely do it. And the thing is we saw what Bob Nutting mentioned, that he's given the front office the green light to go add players early and try to jump the market. But that being said, there's like no one really available right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's like, I mean, I think a player who makes so much sense for the Pirates is Taylor Ward. I think he would improve that team in a lot of different ways. And if they can end up adding him, maybe adding some other pieces to that roster to improve the offense, which has been really underwhelming, I think that'd be a really good start. But considering what Bob Nutting has said, what Ben Cherington has said, and then where they're at in the standings, because they're hovering around 500 right now, and they have two of the most electrifying pitchers in baseball in Paul Skenes and Jared Jones. They're a playoff nightmare for any team in a short series. I think they have to seriously explore going out and getting a bat or two. And I anticipate that they ultimately in the end will do it. Mitch Keller is a good shot. I can't believe I forgot.
Okay, I don't know how much more of this we need to listen to, but when he said no, what
then to he went Vlad Jr., I guess.
But then he went on to talk about
they
how
they should get a bat and think they will get a bat, but just not Vlad Jr. That's how I took that, to put a concise spin on it.
But where in what I said did I ever make it sound like this is going to happen?
No, I think we both said that we don't think it's going
right,
to happen.
Right, I just said they would be willing to somewhat mortgage the future for him.
Source. I'm going to read this very slowly and very clearly.
Please do.
Specifically for Cody. Pirates front office loves Vlad Guerrero Jr., and that is the one player they'd be willing to somewhat mortgage the future for.
Go on.
But I've also heard Blue Jays want a ton back for him. Multiple people referenced the Soto package the Nats got from the Padres. Any statement anyone's making that you're saying it's going to happen is an inference on their part.
That's why I started the show when we talked about this by saying it's glass half full, glass half empty. There's good news and bad news. The good news is they really like the player.